0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Now, I want to go straight away over to John. John, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
Yeah, John, it was actually your wife that contacted us in relation to the situation that you found yourselves in. The nightmare began for you really on April 25th when you were evicted through no fault of your own.
Yeah. Basically, after 7 years being renting in the same house, the landlord unfortunately had to sell up, and basically we were made homeless.
And I'm sure you got a bit of notice or whatever that was coming, but you weren't able to find alternative rental accommodation.
No. Oh, well, he gave us the full 6 months notice they had to give. We've basically been applying for houses. We're applying for the houses since January. We've applied for hundreds of houses, and basically out of the hundreds of houses we applied for, we got four viewings, and anytime we went to the viewings, there was loads of people going to view the houses as well. And basically because we both were not working, he said, we didn't get it, essentially.
And you have young children?
Yeah, we have an 8-year-old and we've 11-month-old twins.
And you said there, you're both of you are not working, but that's a fairly recent, well, obviously your wife, I suppose, with 11-month-old twins is, that explains that side, yeah.
Yeah, well, basically, both of us lost our jobs when COVID hit. We're both in the industries that basically were affected by COVID, and we lost our jobs. And then obviously my wife then got pregnant with the twins, and then was obviously being out of work because of that. I went back to college because my industry was hit hard, so I went back and tried to re-educate myself to get a job in some other industry because, you know, it was badly affected.
Yeah. But you were still paying your rent. You were still keeping the wool from the door until, as you say, your landlord actually decided to sell up for his own reasons.
Yeah, well, we were on rent relief, obviously, because the two of us were out walking on rent relief, and obviously we're paying the rent to the landlord, and obviously we paid rent for the 7 years anyway. We always paid rent on time. You know, never had any issues with bills or anything like that. So we were always. Apart from the time through COVID, we were always working.
Okay, so the 25th of April came, and what did you do? I mean, did you have anywhere to go on the 25th of April?
Well, on the 25th of April, we basically went to a friend's house. We slept on the couch of a friend's house for a couple of days, but obviously that wasn't going to work out. So basically we went to, we had some money anyway. We actually had money ready for a deposit to move in somewhere, which we thought we'd get. But we had to use that. We went to a hotel, and basically we stayed there in a hotel hoping that something would come up. No one came up, so we're obviously in contact with the councils trying to find somewhere. They were saying they had nothing for us. There was nowhere for us to go. My wife had been in contact with the council, like, obviously, throughout the whole, like, before we were made homeless, and they were basically, my wife had said to them, so what happens on the date when we have to move out of our rented accommodation, where do we go? And their response was, you go to the Garda. We have nowhere to go. We have nowhere to put you.
With 11-month-old twins and an 8-year-old, your 8-year-old is a little boy, is it?
Yeah.
So with an 8-year-old little boy and 11-month-old twins, you were told we have no emergency accommodation lined up for you, you have to go to the guards.
Go to the guard station, lock up at the guard station.
That must have been just devastating.
Yeah, my wife was obviously so upset by it. My wife's been so upset throughout this whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you that because you can, this... email that your wife wrote to us, I mean, it's so clear. She's so distressed about the situation with the children, with the situation that you're now in. How is she now?
Oh, she's just like every day, like, she obviously she's in tears. Like, I mean, like, there's not one day since we left the house that she doesn't have mom for it. She cries because it's just so hard. Like, in the place we're in at the moment, it's it's not suited to have a family in it. It's just, it's so hard to get out of the place.
Where are you now, John? Describe the place you're in.
I won't give the details, the actual name, but I'll describe what it is.
Yeah.
So it says a B&B, but it feels more like nearly like a hostel sort of situation. But we have our own bathroom. There's two rooms, bedrooms. They have bunk beds in it, and we have cots in one cot in one room and a cot in the other room, and that's a living space. We've no table. We've one chair. That's like really in bad state. There's no space for us to put any, we have to do the bottles, make up the bottles on the windowsill, because there's nowhere to actually, there's no table or anything to do the bottles. Our sterilizer that we have, like to sterilize the bottles, sits on the floor on a towel because we have no counter space to put stuff. We've nowhere to put our clothes, so we're living out of bags. Our bags are just on the floor. We have to live out there because there's no actually where to put our clothes.
And how are you like managing to cook meals? Can you cook at all?
No, well, they provide meals in the place. They provide breakfast now. We kind of have been eating, like, we've been having the cereal in the morning. It's kind of like a few times we've actually gone to relations or friends' houses. They provide us for dinner, so we've had dinner in their houses and stuff, and other times we've went out and had food out. But apart from that, like, to be honest, me and my wife haven't actually eaten proper, like, in weeks.
Yeah.
Because it's just to be honest, half the time I'm not even that hungry. Like, I wouldn't eat breakfast in the morning because I'm not hungry.
Just from the stress of it.
Yeah.
And I'm just conscious your little lad, is he going to school from this accommodation?
Yeah, well, we basically, my wife just had to bring him to school, and it's basically on a good day you might get up in a half or 40 minutes, but it could take you, like the other day it took her an hour and a half to get in because there was an accident. So it took an hour and a half to get in from where we were to the school.
And again, I mean, does he have to do homework? How is he?
Well, that's the thing. He has to do homework, and doing homework, he has to do homework on the bed because obviously there's no area for him to do it. So he has to do it on the bed. So it's quite difficult. What I mean?
And I know your wife is saying that the lift in this place doesn't fit the double buggy.
No, it doesn't fit the double buggy. So basically, if me and my wife are there, the way it is, we'll take a baby each, we'll put the buggy in and we'll squeeze into the lift because the lift's so small, and then we'll go down. But if my wife went off out for the day, like to over, like the washing or whatever, and I'm left in the apartment, it's very difficult. Like the other day, I tried to get down the stairs for the first time with the buggy, hopping it down the stairs. And I ended up holding my neck because it's that difficult to try and get down the stairs. There's six steps, if you understand me, that go down.
I'm just picturing this, and I'm thinking, like, if there was a fire or anything, that would be serious situation, surely.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's a set of steps as you come out of our room. There's a set of steps, six steps. So you have to go down them. So,
the stress of that, and just with having twins as a mother of twins myself, I know what it's like to have 11-month-old twins in the best of circumstances. I cannot imagine the circumstances that you are in right now, and your wife is in right now. I just the stress on your mental health, really.
Yeah, it's a horrible situation. Like this is a time where the babies are developing. Like one of the lads started to crawl a couple of weeks ago, and now he's standing up, and they're really moving around now. But they essentially did nowhere to move around because they're in a bedroom with cots and beds, bunk beds, and the bunk beds are like hard, and like, you know what I mean? They're crawling all over the place, you know.
You're in Dublin 15 was where you were trying to be, because that's where your son is in school. But you've widened your search now for somewhere to rent.
Well, we actually widened the search fairly early on, because after initial few weeks, we realised there was no accommodation in Dublin 15 anywhere. I think throughout this whole time, I think I've seen two houses up in our area in Dublin 15. For the price range that we were essentially we could afford. Like,
can I ask you what kind of rent would you be able to afford?
Well, we're covered by Homeless Help. We got approved for Homeless Help, and that cover in Dublin, basically you're covered for $19.50, and you can top up depending on what your income is. So at the moment I'm in college. I just finished up college, and I was on VSOS payment, and my wife is on social welfare payment. So it's basically 30% of that. Yeah. So I think we worked out we could afford 2,400 maybe.
So you could afford 2,400,
and
you've been applying for all of everything that comes up. Obviously, how far out are you searching now? How far are you willing to go?
We've applied for Dublin, Kildare, Meath, Wicklow. We've even applied for a few places in Clare, and also we've applied for a few places in Wexford. But obviously, with the Homeless Help, the way it works, that before you move outside of Dublin, the rate decreases. So it might be $19.50 in Dublin, but I think it was like some like $700 or $800 in Clare. So,
but you haven't been able to find anything at all.
No, we had four viewings out of hundreds since January.
Four viewings out of hundreds of applications.
Yeah.
In what's January? What is that? 5 months.
Yeah.
And do you think it's because you're HAP? Do you think there's an issue with when you tell landlords that you're relying on assistance from HAP?
No, well, we only recently got approved for HAP. We were told initially that we wouldn't get approved for HAP till the middle of May. So actually, around now, we're actually told we wouldn't get approved by HAP. But basically, somehow the process was speeded up, and we got approved for HAP. But for the place that we've applied for, we've got none back. We haven't heard anything for viewings in probably at least a month, I think it is.
And are you telling people when you apply for places, we have these tiny babies, we've these small babies,
we're telling the full situation, the story. We're telling them, obviously now we're telling them that we're approved for HAP. We have that ready to go, like that. You know what I mean? We're able to pay the true HAP. We're able to pay for the accommodation, because like we went to view one place in Wicklow, and the landlord, it was directly with the landlord, and he seemed very interested about us, moving in. And then when we told him that our HAP still hadn't come through, he basically asked, would we be in a position to pay and stuff, and he didn't feel secure that we could afford to pay, even though we had 2 months' rent up front to pay them.
Yeah, and of course the thing is, we know landlords can be pickers and choosers in this market. They can get somebody, whoever they want, because they have their pick of, as you say, hundreds of applicants for every place now. So what are you facing into? Like, are you stuck in this place until you find?
Yeah, we were told we were ringing on Friday to see if there was any update, and we were basically told there's nothing for us to basically accommodate your family. That more or less you just have to stick it out where you are, and that you won't be moved anytime soon.
Do you think you're going to be able to hold it together, though, in the situation you're in, your wife in particular?
You just have to. I mean, we just feel let down, though. We just feel let down by the government. Like, we just feel let down by the councils, that, we're put in this position, that nobody should be putting this. It's not only me. It's not like there's other families out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody should have. Nobody should be put in this position.
Yeah, yeah. John, listen, I wish you the absolute best of luck. My heart goes out to you because I could not imagine the stress of the situation you're in. You're right, there are so many families in that position. We have another caller who is also in emergency accommodation. We'll take a break. Best of luck to you, John, and to your wife and to your family.
Okay.
And hopefully you'll be able to move on and get a place soon.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Brenda, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon.
Brenda, where did you sleep last night?
I'm currently in a homeless accommodation because the house I was renting 8 years was put up for sale after I pushed for vital repairs to be carried out in the house. So I'm in homeless accommodation at the moment. And working.
So you're working, you have a full-time job?
Yes, I have a 9-hour day every day and I'm currently cycling 11 kilometres to work and 11 kilometres back to the accommodation I'm staying in.
And how long have you been in this particular accommodation?
This is coming into my third week now, which has been really unsettling and upsetting. I'm the only person that works there as well, so you're not guaranteed like an early night or a full night's sleep.
What kind of accommodation are we talking about here? Is it a hostel or?
No, it's for homeless women, but it's a house. But it's not like a rental daft, like off daft, where you're sharing with other people or working or anything. It's all people who have nowhere to go and nowhere to live.
Are you sharing a room? What's the setup there?
I'm sharing a room and I have a bed.
Right. Tell me how. We'll go back right to the beginning, Brenda. How did you end up in this situation? Were you renting over a long period?
You never expect yourself to end up in this situation because you think, I work, I pay taxes, I pay bills, I go out to work every day. I raised my daughter by myself, working full time, and I made the choice to always work and pay for childcare, and I was caught in the rental trap that people are highlighting over the past number of years. But it really, this is going back the past 20 years because my daughter has just turned 24 and I've been caught in the rentals, private rental system that long. I've had to rent during the boom, paying $1,700 a month for a shoebox, one-bedroom apartment with just a kitchen kind of esque with a single bed. Oftentimes, my daughter slept on mattresses on floors, and I've been in a single bed. And that was all during the boom, and I was working in top-tier companies and corporate firms. So you never anticipate this kind of thing happening to you. And I've just turned 50 as well.
God, Brenda. And so what actually happened then? So presumably, as you say, you're still working, you're paying your taxes. Were you stretched to pay the rent?
And I have worked out in 8 years, I have paid over 85,000, 90,000 in rent to that landlord. I put my own money into that house. I painted it. I tended the gardens. I cleaned the windows. But all of that was just forgotten. So despite the fact I'd gotten a rent increase notice, the house went on the market a couple of weeks ago and I had to leave.
So
I lost my job at this point and I'd nowhere to go. And this is where I slipped between the cracks. Now I'm separated from my beloved little teacup Yorkie Blossom. And it's breaking my heart because I've never been away from her. I started a new job working, you know, leaving a homeless accommodation to start a new job and go to work every day.
Brenda, so when you, presumably when you got the notice to quit, you tried to find another, or, you know, another similar type accommodation, another home.
I've been scrambling to find, and when you're trying to do anything with a shotgun to your head, it's not a great time to try and make decisive decisions and use judgment. And the fact that I have a little dog, the fact that I'm probably nearly 50, and I know that landlords say they can't use those things to marginalise you. And as you know, the rents have just gone up and up and up.
Yeah.
So I know of people who have gone to see places and they've been offered to them. And then the moment that they say they're entitled to a half payment, they get some sort of call. It's never in writing that a couple that came to see it 2 days before have come back and they're taking it, or somebody else. And it's just the way it is.
Am I right in saying as well, Brenda, there was a relationship breakdown as well, which contributed to the situation you found yourself in?
Yes, because I was due to move in with my partner, and that would have allayed a lot of stress on me. And I was there a week and I was told that it wasn't working out and I needed to go. So I've just had anything that I could conceive as a nightmare has happened to me in the past 3 weeks. And you never, never think that it will happen to you. And I don't mean it's a class thing. But you just say, I was brought up, I went to school, I went to college, I've worked, I contribute, I earn, and you still find yourself in a situation. Like, I went into shock, actually, the first night that I was in the accommodation. I haven't been sleeping, and I'm trying to get up and perform and work a nine-hour day every day and get on my bike and go to work because I'm just in disbelief. It's not something that you just reconcile with overnight, that you say, how did this happen? I'm actually 50 years of age and I'm homeless.
And can I ask you, you mentioned your dog, Blossom, there.
Yes.
Where is Blossom right now?
It's lucky we weren't talking on Friday, because I was walking around crying my eyes out all day Friday. And anyone who's listening who's a dog lover, I'm getting really upset now. I've been asked to give her to people that wouldn't give me a location address or a phone number or a name. And I just kept asking for confirmation that this was temporary and I'd get her back. So now I, through good fortune of a very good friend in Kerry, her cousin lives in Cork, and I have to travel all the way to Cork on Saturday to give my dog to somebody I've never met but who's a dog lover and will look after her temporarily while I try to grapple with finding somewhere that will accept myself and Blossom. I'm going down on the train on Saturday morning to drop Blossom off and come back without her.
And Brenda, do you have like friends or family who could help you out of this, just to get you over this gap?
No, I don't. My family are in the UK, and my mother, unfortunately, she's very old, and it's not even conceivable to try and stay with her.
And your daughter is sorted herself. You don't have to worry about your daughter now.
No, my daughter works from home. She's in a tiny one-bed apartment, which is three floors up. And as you can appreciate, she's living her own life, and she can't look after my dog while she's working at a desk in her apartment all day and be expected to stay with her all night and walk her. I mean, I brought Blossom everywhere with me. She was the kind of dog, and people that know me, she was at hairdresser's appointments with me. If I go out on my bike, she loves going in a little handbag on the handlebars. I've brought her to the cinema in a bag. I've gone to the tax office with her in a bag. She's been with me since the day I got her. Like, it's like giving your child away, you know?
I know. And this hostel that you're in, you can't keep Blossom with you there?
No, I was told, in no uncertain terms, it wasn't feasible and it wasn't possible.
And how do you feel about being in this house?
It's really hard, and It's not because I'm saying I'm different or it should happen to some people and it shouldn't happen to me. I've never been in this situation before. You can't leave valuables. Like, you know, you can't. Things would get taken. It's a world I've never experienced. It's really traumatic. And I'm trying to function every day and present my best self in a job that I only started. And I'm compartmentalising what's real and true and happening to me in order to go into work and to hold down my job and because I need it.
Do you have, like, your belongings with you there? Like, where are all your things?
I had to leave a lot of my belongings behind after that relationship broke down. And I haven't been able to go back and get them. The rest are in somebody's shed, which will go damp. But I just think this is insurmountable because I know because of what happened and the 8 years I was at my last accommodation that this will just keep repeating itself. And maybe you can bounce back more when you're in your 20s and it happens and again and again. Well, this has been my life, renting. I know that you can stay places longer now because there's more provisions, but you're really looking at a window of 2 years before, you know, so you're not going to, you try to invest in a place and like make it your home, your nest, and have it nice. And you're going back every day and you're just saying, I can't get too cozy here because there will come a day when I have to leave here as well. Mm. And nothing is permanent. There's no stability. And it's really hit home to me now that I'm older, that how are you meant to sustain, you know, living like that when you know that you're going to be moved on again by a landlord?
What is your feelings today? I mean, are you, you know, as you say, you've got to get yourself out of that house and into work mm-hmm. on a bike on a long. Like, how do you feel about your circumstances now, Brenda?
I'm trying to stay hopeful, but last week with Blossom and everything, I felt a despair that I'm not used to feeling because I really believe in Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. He was in the concentration camps and he was a doctor, a psychiatrist, and he said, when the last shred of will and hope is gone from a person, there's no drive to keep going and there's no more motivation to try. And I felt that so acutely last week. You know, I was like, I don't know where I go from here and I don't know how I'm meant to keep going, to strive for something if I have to give my dog to a stranger and keep doing what I'm doing over the past 3 weeks.
What are you going to do next?
I don't know. And I think that's the most honest answer I can give. I have been scrambling to think of things like if I saved and I got a transit van, I could make it into a kind of a camper van or revamp it. Or I'm constantly trying to think around this whole snakes and ladders of the private rental system, and you've all these things hindering you. They're like shackles.
But you know, Brenda, you do sound like, for somebody in, like, for by any measure or means, somebody in very difficult circumstances. You sound very, still very together, you know, very much thinking about how you're going to pull yourself out of this. I mean, just fair play to you.
Well, I'm trying to look after myself as best I can in really, really awful circumstances. I also have the clarity of knowing that this is bigger than me because this is the problem with the system that is going on. And I really don't feel that there's any real intention to solve the housing crisis. I've tried over the years to get on the housing ladder and you would have people that were so ill-informed in their own life experience. And it's true no fault of their own that they say to you, why do you rent? It's a waste of money. And when you're renting and you're paying 1900 a month of your salary before you buy
groceries or bring your child to the shoe shop to get a new pair of shoes for school. You've no conceivable chance of saving for a mortgage, no. You know?
No. Brenda, all I can say is I wish you the very best of luck. As I say, you deserve it. You're trying to pull your life together and keep the show on the road there. And as I say, and as well, best of luck for Blossom with their foster family. And I hope you get back together soon, Brenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Yes, Brenda. Now I want to bring in Brian. Brian, good afternoon. Do I have Brian on the line?
You do. Hello.
Hiya, Brian. How are you?
How are you?
Yeah, Brian, you're on the other side of this equation. You're a landlord.
Yeah, I think I've listened to I've listened to many stories of people who found themselves outside of the property and find themselves in dire situations for no fault of their own. And from my perspective, I provide accommodation for 20 families in different units in need.
20 families, you've 20 different properties.
So on one side of it, you would think, you know, that's a very lucky place to be, to have 20 properties and provide accommodation for 20 families. But when I try to look at it and I try to make sense of it, it doesn't work. So if I look at it like this, so for our properties would be a lot less. It'd be 1,000 a month. I think Dublin is nearly 2 and 2.4, but in Meath it'd be about 1,000 a month. So 1,000 a month is 240,000 gross income is what we would get from those properties, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it does.
But then you have repairs to them, because we're talking 20 two-bed apartments. So those apartments need to be repainted. They just general wear and tear. We have some fantastic tenants. They're fantastic families. They look after the places really, really well. But just living in any place requires upkeep. So that upkeep comes in at about 90,000 euros a year. And that covers also somebody who actually goes out and carries out all those repairs. And we do keep a very close eye to make sure that everybody lives reasonably well. But then on top of that, then we pay 91,000 in tax. So the tax man gets 91,000. And that leaves me with 59,000, which still sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's 59,000, does not sound too bad. But remember, I've got 20 properties. And the difficulty with properties is every so often you have to go in and you have to give them a full makeover and things just wear out.
They say never do maths live on air, but
sure.
Am I right in saying you're saying you're getting the equivalent of about less than 3,000 euro profit per apartment from your business?
Yes. Correct.
And that's before you have to fix or replace a washing machine or whatever?
No. So what I'm saying is the repairs are 90,000. That includes all the repairs and replacements. 91,000 in tax to the government, and that leaves me with 59,000 left over. But I think the bit that really scares me most of all is that there is a bill of about 7,000 per apartment, which will be coming fairly soon, which is to basically upgrade some parts of the unit. Now, that comes in at 140,000. So 140,000 now puts me in a negative situation. So now I'm sitting on a negative situation with those 20 properties. Now, I'm not the only person providing accommodation who's doing the same maths. And what most people are doing is they're selling the properties because they can't make it work. It doesn't work.
And can I ask you, the 1,000 euro a month, is that the going rate? Are you in a rent pressure zone?
Yes.
You are. So is that the going rate in that?
In around Meath, maybe 1,200 would be the going rate.
Okay. So, you know, you're offering your tenants a fairly good rate there.
Yeah.
That can become a problem then again, though, can't it, if you want to sell it on? Because the next landlord, if anybody wants to rent that out again, has to base their new rent on the rent that you were charging.
Yeah. So it gets more complicated again. So if, for instance, I wanted to go out and say I wanted to, you know, continue providing accommodation, and I actually like providing accommodation. I like the whole thing. I enjoy building the properties and getting them up to scratch and having people around and having nice place for people to live and all that kind of stuff. I enjoy that. But in the morning, if I wanted to go out and buy, say, another 20 apartments, and say I could do an amazing deal, and I could buy each one of those apartments for 200,000 euros, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would come in at 4 million.
Mm-hmm.
And if I take 4 million and I was paying 6% on that, that would cost me 240,000 just to pay the interest on that. Now look at my original equation, and 240,000 is the gross income that I'm making on the 20 units. So I would lose about 181,000 if I was to do it now,
yeah,
a year.
So I mean, I'm conscious there was a report on this on the Clare Byrne today with Clare Byrne today. Brian O'Connell did a report on the numbers of houses, numbers of rental units available for rent around the country at the moment, and I think we were told that in 2009 there was 24,000 units available for rent on the property website like daft.ie. And today there is 835. So that is, as I said earlier, 97% reduction in the amount of properties available for rent in the country. Now, there's a lot more properties, as was pointed out this morning, available for rent for holiday shortlets, like Airbnb type accommodation. But are you saying, Brian, that those figures don't surprise you because it is no longer, even despite the fact that rents are through the roof? I think people find it very hard to believe or understand that when rents are as crazy levels that they're at the moment, that landlords are not, you know, coining it.
It's the tax man who's making the money. So if you look at my equation there, 91,000 goes in tax, 59,000 comes to me. So the tax man, the big benefactor of increased rental prices is not the landlord, it's the tax. So it's the government making it, coining it, not the landlords. And here's another example of that. If you think of it, the government has failed completely in providing social housing. In fact, if you look at the number of social units they've provided in the last few years, it's in the hundreds. My understanding, sorry, is it's in the hundreds. Now, the reason behind that, and this is just one other point, the reason behind that, I understand, is because they can only collect about 50% of the rents that are there. So providing social housing from a corporation point of view is this huge loss-making exercise. So they don't want to provide social housing. What they want to do is they want the private sector to provide the housing at a loss. That's what it feels to me. So we become a social... So I am a social... providing a social service, if you like. And again, I know anybody who is thinking of the word landlord, and I hate the word landlord because it's back to my father when he was in the 1916, and you know, we came from a very relatively poor background. Some of the family were tenant farmers, and that brings up a whole raft of emotive aspects. I think I provide accommodation for families who can't afford to buy a house or can't afford to buy something. And that's what I provide. I provide housing.
Do you have any issue with people? Because we heard there from our callers, from Brenda, that, you know, people, when you say you're relying on HAP, that, you know, some landlords don't like to hear that. They'll go with the professional couples instead or whatever. Do you have an issue with the type of tenants that you let to?
No. Again, HAP, right, what is HAP? HAP is a government guarantee. The government is guaranteeing the rent. So from an investor's point of view, you don't require, that person might lose their job, but the HAP will definitely be paid. The government will pay it. So HAP is, you know, from a landlord's point of view, HAP is a major plus. Now, not all landlords see it that way, but in reality, HAP is a government guarantee that the rents will be paid, and that, if for a landlord, is what it's all about.
But I mean, okay, your situation. Now, people will be surprised, I think, to hear that, as I say, in these incredible sky high rents that you are, you know, as I say, not coining it entirely, but you know, you're still making a profit on each and every one of those units, and as we know, the value of those units is increasing hugely and has increased hugely over recent years. So, you know, you're not doing too badly, really, Brian, are you?
So that, and you see, this is where the problem arises, because in reality, the the return you get for the capital that you invest. So in other words, you invest, in this case we're saying 4 million, and for that 4 million investment you're getting 59,000. And again, and my apologies hugely to people who are in the dire situation of having lost their homes and they're in dire situations, and I'm talking, you know, these big, big figures, and to them it's just shocking and obscene that I should be able to talk these figures. But in reality, you would be better off investing in stocks and shares. The S&P went up by 8%. If you look at the last 10 years, even with the market ups and downs, it did 8% over the last 10 years. So without any trouble, without having to deal with the PRCD, without having to deal with delinquent, you know, with tenants, in some cases, you know, you often can find them get the difficult into somebody who's difficult. I would make more money by putting the money into stocks and shares. And yeah, that's what's happening.
The difference
that's
being, of
why.
Course, because there is two types of landlords, isn't there, Brian? I mean, there is the likes of yourself, and then there's the other category, the big corporate landlords, what we were calling the cuckoo funds and the vulture funds and all of that.
And they drove up the rents. So the government brought in the cuckoo funds and provided them this ability to provide accommodation and not pay any tax. So in a lot of cases, the big firms that are providing the accommodation, they're doing it in various different trusts in a way that they don't pay any income tax or any corporation tax on that income. My understanding is it's coming out complete gross. So they're getting that 100% without tax. Some are paying 20% max. So on those same figures, say the gross 240,000, the cuckoo funds would be paying somewhere in the region of 18,000 compared to mine because of the way the structure is.
Right.
So so the house, the reason the rental sector is in such a mess is there's lots of reasons. But firstly, the reason there is no rental accommodation and the reason why it keeps going down is because the government is meddling. And they brought in the PRCD with the greatest of intentions. But in the morning, say we were talking about electricity or we were talking about any utility, and if the government says, okay, well, we want to be fair to everybody and we want to put in controls on the price of utilities and we're going to make it so that you only pay 20% or 30% of the real cost of those utilities, the utility companies would go out of business. And in the same way, the landlords are going out of business and they are selling off the properties. So there is no rental property and there won't be any more rental property other than the large cuckoo funds who are providing it at a premium, 2,400, 2,700 a month. You can see it there.
Yeah. Are you going to stay in the game, Brian?
I'd like to, because I do like the people that I have with me. And my worry is obviously the capital costs and the fact that at the moment with the PRTB, the other thing that they've started doing is they've increased the regulation. So there's two new things that are happening. So we have to pay now for every year to register the properties with the PRTB. The other thing that's happened is the county councils now have started they've started to basically inspect all the units, which I don't mind because the units we have are in very good condition, but they have a vested interest to find defects. So when they come in, they will find something small and they say, this has to be done, and you have to do it. And it just goes on. And then you've got public liability and you've got, you know, security. And,
yeah, you still, though, you know, at the end of the day, and I know the listeners out there shouting at the radio going, he still has 20 properties, though. And,
agreed.
You know, I suppose compared to some of the people, and Brian, I do appreciate, though, you calling, giving us that perspective, because it's one we need to take on board as well, if we're going to get to the bottom of how we get out of this mess, as you say. But I'll let you go because we've got a lot of callers,
sure.
Some of them in very difficult situations. I want to go to...
I know.
Thanks,
okay.
Brian. Thank you.
Nice talking to you. Bye now.
I want to bring in Sandra. Sandra, good afternoon.
Hi there. Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. What's your situation, Sandra?
Right. I was a renter from 2008 up to 2019. I am now living in my own home, but unfortunately, because my partner and I broke up, it's in the court's hands at the minute. So we could be, you know, end up homeless, technically. Yeah. Hopefully not. But that said, I'm listening to the programme, and as being a person that was a renter with five children, I have six, but my eldest was married and had their own had his own accommodation. I know that the rental situation in Ireland is not fit for purpose. There is no tenure for, we have no protection either for the renting end of it or for the landlord. Because it's done on a yearly basis, it can even be done on a 6-monthly basis, which is ridiculous, you know, because how can you safeguard from both ends? How can the tenant be safeguarded and how can the landlord be safeguarded?
And did you go through this, Sandra?
I did. And I was on, up here, it wasn't HAP. It was RAS, the Rental Assistance Scheme. It was payment, basically like the HAP. Mm-hmm. But like that, you would come across landlords that would not entertain anybody on that payment, because in order for you to qualify, the landlord has to be registered with the PRTB, has to have all of, you know, his paperwork done, has to be registered for tax. And a lot of the landlords are not. And they prefer, you know, basically a catch-and-hand situation. However, it's not even that. It's just the rental situation in Ireland is a nightmare. It's frightening.
You think moving out of Dublin is actually the only option now for... You did this.
Well, it was for us. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you listen to all those families that are now in hotels... Those children are going to grow up very resentful, very, very angry young people. Now, you know, people are not prepared for that. They have no play areas. They have no quality of life. Their parents must be, I can't even pretend to know how they must be going through all of this. You become institutionalised. You know, you start looking at things through that very narrow spectre. You're living in a hotel. You're told what to do. You're told when to eat. You're told when you can't. You know, the children can't play, blah, blah, blah. What I found moving out of all of that was, yes, we got a house. The education system was far better. The classes were smaller. The children were happier. Okay, the Wi-Fi was a little bit contentious, but it has hugely improved now.
Where did you go to, Sandra? Can you say
Cavan?
Yeah. So not too far away, actually. Like, people do actually commute from South Cavan, I think.
They do. I mean, I work in Maynooth, and I commute down. The bus system has improved. Now, it still has loads to do, but it's improving all the time. But my point is the quality of life, the children. That fear factor was gone.
Yeah.
My home was my home. It was in my... But then you have to add in the rental situation, because out of whim, the landlord can and has done, just said, I want the property back. And you're given to maybe 4 weeks' notice.
Yeah, it's a terrifying scenario. And I mean, as you say, so when you have children, it just adds a whole extra dimension to... the precarious nature of these arrangements. Sandra, will you hang on? I want to bring in Anne, Anne, you're a landlord as well.
That's right, yeah. I have two houses in Dublin. I have another one in Cavan. And I would consider the taxes crippling. And so much so, I have five children. My youngest son is earning a very good salary, and he was trying to buy in Dublin and around Dublin. And every time he went to get a house, it would go for, let's say, 450 or something like that. And when he'd go to make inquiries on it, it'd be gone up to 550 or the like. And he just gave up, and he decided to buy a house in the north of Ireland, which is only an hour and a half from Dublin. So I see him quite often, and he has his own house. He bought it for 185.
And does he commute from there?
He's working from home. He's an IT worker, so he works from home. He told his employer that he wasn't prepared to work in the office because of the house problem. And he's 33, and he felt he was too old to be living at home. So what he decided to do is go to the north, and he bought a house. And as I say, he was here yesterday. He's doing very well. Another son I have working in London, and he's working from home as well. He's more or less comes over to me quite a lot, but I advised him not to buy a house in Dublin. or in Ireland, because the prices are, it just can't go on the way it is. It has to change. And I have a daughter in London, a son in London. I have a son in Poland who's thinking of buying a house there, a son in the north of Ireland, and I have one son living in Wicklow.
Oh, you're well scattered, a well scattered crew.
Absolutely scattered.
But the houses that you rent out and that you have tenants,
yeah,
in, are they in rent pressure zones?
Yes, one is in Dublin 4, and what the tenants are actually paying is about $650 a month.
That must be one of the cheapest houses available in Dublin 4.
I paid a lot of money to get done up. There's 5 bedrooms, there's 5 tenants. They have one huge big kitchen.
Oh, these are all, yeah, so $640 between by 5.
By 5, so it's about 3,100.
Okay, so
which sounds good, but they all have their own private double bedroom. I spent 200,000 on the house before I let it, and so like I invested in the house. It was for my pension, and I think they're getting a good deal. Like none of my tenants.
Are you making money on that, Anne? Because Brian was
no. I'm not making money. But I'm not losing money. I have no mortgage.
Okay, so
I worked very, very hard to buy our first house when I was very young. Like when I was about 29 or 30, we bought our second house for our letting. We let it to students, and it was a struggle. It was hard. With students, you have to make sure you get the money. The parents give them the rent on Sunday. They come up on Sunday night, and then you have to make sure you get the rent on Monday because they could drink it.
Sure, you don't mean that as a slur on all students, Anne.
No, but they have to take that on board that could happen. So I was always I went down to the house and collected the rent from each person because I know the mother's giving the rent. So you have to be, like, there's a lot of work in having students, is the point I'm making. So it wasn't easy when I started my first house. So it's grand now. You know, I worked it through, but it was very, very difficult at the beginning.
And would you recommend this as a pension plan, Anne?
Not now. But it was. I mean, it's what my family always had. They always. I don't believe in pensions because you're giving your money to somebody else to decide where to invest it. If they make a mistake, you're the one that suffers. They don't. So that's why bricks and mortar is what I would call it. I believe in that because even when the crisis hit us in 2008, house properties went down. But loads of my children had pensions and their pensions disappeared, whereas I could still go over and feel my bricks and mortar.
Right. And you're going to stay in the business? You're not one of those
people? Actually, I'm considering selling all of them and going over to Spain and buying holiday apartments. I reckon I could get 10 or 12 holiday apartments in Spain, and somebody else lets them, and there's no problem.
And that'd be more people out on looking for new accommodation.
Yeah, but I think
accommodation.
The government are very slow. I mean, everything they're doing is crippling the mum and pop landlords, as they call them. What Brian was saying, everything Brian said, I absolutely aced. And it's the first time I've heard any landlord saying the problem is the money is going to the taxman. Now, the taxman, with the money they're taking from me and from buying and the rest of us, they're going to give 120,000 to developers to build one apartment. Like,
yeah, this is this new pre-Kona scheme.
How can they justify that? That's just stupidity as far as I'm concerned. I cannot believe that's bad. But all of this problem probably stems from the fact that Michael Noonan got rid of all the bedsits. Like that woman that was on to you and she was talking about getting a van and living in the van. She'd be happy with a bedsit. I lived in a bedsit for a year. And you're sharing a bathroom, you've got your own bedroom, you've got your own cooking facilities, you probably have your own fridge. I can't remember if I had a fridge or not, I don't think I did. That would have been back in 1975-ish that I was renting. I rented a house in a room in Ranelagh. Mm-hmm. And I did it for the fun of it. I left home for a year and then I went back home.
I know, but then at the time, everyone was saying we have to bring up all the rental accommodation has to be brought up to a standard. Yes. And people were living in pretty terrible circumstances.
That woman that was talking about buying a van, would she be better off in a bedsitter? Or the people that are living in the family living in the parents' box room? Like, would they be better off in a bedsit?
Indeed.
You know, like the bedsit was a problem that they when they got rid of it. That's where it all stems from, I believe. But everything Brian said, I absolutely back. It's the taxman that's getting the money. The landlords would not be selling the houses if they were making a profit.
Indeed.
And we are not. I have no mortgage, and I am not making a profit.
Okay.
I am
Okay, and I'm going to have to go. We've so many calls coming in on this, but I appreciate you calling in. Many thanks for that. We'll take a break.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now I want to bring in Johnny. Johnny, good afternoon.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, Johnny, you're a tenant.
Yeah.
You're a HAP tenant?
I am, yeah, yeah.
And what's your story?
Well, I would agree with the landlords there. The landlords aren't making any money out of the tenants. I know my own landlady, fair play to her, she gets less in rent than what I pay on HAP. And the rest of the money just goes directly to the tax man and different institutions, insurance and so on. So, like, I started this rental contract 5 years ago when rents were lower. The house wasn't in great condition, so I thought maybe I'd be able to find a different property, like, through the council. So I actually requested an inspector to come out, which he did. I took notes all over the house, and the next thing, he sent a letter to the landlady saying she would have to quit, or she would have to pay 30,000 in repairs to the house, or else, she couldn't continue with the HAP tenancy. So at that point, I got a letter of an eviction notice from the landlady saying that she would rather sell the property than put 30,000 euros worth of repairs into it, because, you know, the house was probably only worth double that at the time anyway. So at that point, I went back to the council and, you know, I pleaded with them that I need this house. I have a daughter. I need a roof over my head. My daughter's in school and whatever. So, you know, just to kind of retract that letter. So they said they would just let it lie. And thankfully, five years later, that's the situation.
So the house has never been done up, or those repairs have never been done?
I take responsibility for the house, and I don't bother the landlady with any kind of extra financial request, because, like I said, like the landlady gets less I'm paying a half rent, which is a subsidized rent, but the landlady actually gets less in rent than what I pay. And look, all of the...
Because of the level of tax she's paying on it.
Everything else goes to the tax man. So, and I know, like, I won't say where I am, but I know that a statistic came out on the radio this morning about HAP tenancies over the last 5 years. 97% of properties in the area that I live have failed inspection, just like my place failed inspections.
So it strikes me, though, Johnny, that what this really means is that there's a lot of people living in substandard accommodation who are afraid to say boo now, or, you know.
What happens is once a property fails an inspection, the council then write to the landlord requesting that these upgrades are made, and then at that point the landlord, like, typically decides, well, we're just going to sell the property, we don't have the money to spend on it, so they just sell the property. So that's the reason why so many landlords, so like the sort of mom and pop landlords, like the last caller said, have exited the market because of this ridiculously high standard that the councils are requesting. I mean, like, 97% have failed. I mean, that's ridiculous. Only 3% of properties in County Clare, in the county where I live, have passed an inspection over the last 5 years. It's crazy.
Is that to do with the stringency of the inspection process, or
it has to be? I mean, that's a far too high bar. 97% are failing. Only 3% are passing. I mean, I know of other properties. I'm not just talking about myself now. I know of other properties where people have been renting fine. The house was absolutely fine, just a regular country house. And the couple decided to go on HAP. And exactly the same thing happened. A council inspector came out, made a list of upgrades that had to be done, sent it off to the landlady, and then she just decided to put the property on the market. And those two people ended up in sort of dire situation, like frantically looking for a house, managed to find a house. But, you know, they're still frantically looking for a place.
That's a real law of unintended consequences in play there.
Well, I mean, you might call it unintended consequences. I think, you know, there's enough smart people in government to know the consequences of what they would do. I think this was a planned out situation to make many, many people homeless and dependent on rent.
You don't believe that this is a deliberate policy to make people homeless?
Yeah, I do.
Why?
You have to ask the government that. You know, ask the housing ministers why they put in policies that create homelessness. I mean, it clearly is. Like, that's what's happening. You know, like, if I had a direct rental agreement with the landlady at the rate that I pay it, you know, just direct to her, with no tax man involved, no HAP involved at all, you know, even still paying this subsidized rate, like this low rate that I pay, mm-hmm. the landlady would actually get more than what she receives through the HAP system. So,
but she wouldn't be paying tax on it.
Well, exactly. If we just cut out the middleman completely and if we just completely cut out the middleman.
Yeah, but we have to have some. I mean, are you saying that landlords should have all their income untaxed?
Yeah, but the rate of rent would then be drastically lower. I mean, you'd be talking about 25%. Like, if you take a rent now of like 1,000 per month, the rent for the tenant would be €250 per month.
Oh yeah, if you could get the landlords to agree to pass on that cut.
The landlord then would actually be receiving
to their tenants.
$250, yeah. Whereas at the moment they're only receiving, you know, through the HAP system, the book price is 1,000, but they only receive maybe 200. Okay. The tenant is paying 250. The landlord is receiving less than that, and the rest goes to the tax man.
Johnny, thanks for that. I want to bring in Joan. You're a landlord as well, Joan.
Hello,
Joan. Do I have Joan on the line?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Joan, yeah. Have you got us?
Yeah, I have now. I was just saying that I have two properties, one in Dublin, one in Carlow. The Carlow property, I haven't, on either of them actually, I haven't raised the rent for the last 7-8 years. It's the same tenants that are in it. The properties are in excellent condition. But if I go about selling either of those properties, I'm going to be penalised.
Yeah.
Because if a landlord again is going to buy those, they can't increase the rent either, only by 4% per annum.
From what you have set the rent at now for all these years.
Yeah,
that's a difficult. I heard that was being raised actually earlier today as well. That the rent pressure zones, there is again an unintended consequence of that, in that it's discouraging these properties where you have landlords who have been very fair to their tenants over many years. They're now at a low, you know, below market rate rent. Those, if you want to sell them, another landlord won't want to touch them with a barge pole.
Exactly.
So are you going to sell up, Joan, or what are you?
I'm getting to the stage. I'm getting to the stage where it's not worth my while, because if either of those tenants decide to move on, which they can do, one of them, the guy that told me that he's.
Okay, we've got a problem there with your line, Joan. We'll try and get Joan on a better line, will we? And I'll bring in Marion if Marion is there. Marion?
Hi, Katie. Yes, hi. I'm in the same situation as Joan. We have two properties. We've never put up the rent. And in the same situation, I kind of feel now if we were to sell those properties, you'd be making people homeless, you know? So just agreeing with what Brian said there, that you almost feel like you're providing social housing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you feel guilty about this.
Yeah.
And are you getting market rent for your properties, Marion?
No, we're not. We're not on, certainly not on one we have in Lucan in Dublin. We're not. We've never put up the rent, and we've got great tenants. And we've had an inspection from the local authority, and we've done all the repairs and things like that. But I suppose we just haven't done it because we haven't kind of, our attitude was, what's an extra €50 going to mean to us, you know, on top of the rent? So what's the point really in putting it up? I suppose we were in the position where we were able to do that.
Yeah.
But I completely see the point that Joan is making, that if you wanted to sell your property to another landlord, you'd be selling it, I don't know, at a loss, or you'd be making somebody homeless, you know?
Well, I suppose ultimately what's happening is that these properties are not being bought by other landlords. They're being taken out of the private rental market. And that's why the stock in the market is shrinking so much. Well, one of the reasons anyway, I suppose. But I'm wondering, like, surely you've always had to pay 50% rent. You've always had to pay, or not rent, tax, I should say. You've always had to pay high taxes on your rental earnings. So why are we hearing complaints about it now when, in fact, overall, you know, the rents are gone so much higher than they were even 5 years ago? There must still be more fat in it now for landlords, surely.
I suppose there's extra regulation that as I think somebody mentioned, there's inspections and then you have to do repairs. There's the rental tenancy board, you know, you have to register for that. You have to pay mortgage and tax and all that. Suppose we're in a position where we've paid off the mortgage on the property in Dublin. So we are making some money on it now. But up till a few years ago, we weren't. So I think if you've got a mortgage on your property, it's difficult enough to make money.
Right. Okay. Well, have I got Joan back now? Joan, good afternoon.
Hello.
Oh,
hello,
you're back. Katie. Yeah, that's a better line again, Joan. Sorry, you were cut off there when you were explaining your situation.
Yeah, what I was saying is that if we wanted to sell either property, we're going to be penalised because we won't get the market value of the property as it stands because we haven't raised the rent in 8 years. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes, that
we're not given any credit for the fact that we never rose the rent.
Yeah, it's a
again,
sort of
we've excellent tenants. We have excellent tenants in both properties. Not denying that at all. They're very good, but as I say, they will be moving on. So then we can't put up the rent. We'll say for the next tenant that comes into it either.
So that property can never get the kind of going market rent now because you have, as you say, kept the rents low over a period of years.
Yeah, exactly.
You wonder, like, is there any way that the whole thing could be reset so that, you know, people in your situation can at least, as you say, you know, if you wanted to have a new property or if you wanted to sell your property, that the property
that
would be kept
sorry,
in the,
Katie,
in
if
the
you
tenant.
To rent,
yeah.
Yeah. If you wanted to re-rent, let's say, if we wanted to re-rent next week, for argument's sake, if the RTB or whoever it is could say, well, right, this rent hasn't been raised in 8 years, so surely they're entitled to put it up by a bit more than 4%. Do you know what I mean?
I know. But, Joan, you know what people will say. Landlords are greedy. They try and squeeze every last penny out
haven't.
Of people.
You see, there are a number of landlords out there that haven't done that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard from a good few of them today that we haven't squeezed them. We look after our tenants. They're certainly good tenants. I'm not denying that in any shape or form. But what I'm saying is that surely we should be given some credit that we didn't raise the rents. And in actual fact, as I said, we lowered the rent when one of the couple lost their job and never reinstated that rent.
And as you say, you pay the price for that then. Sorry, Marion, you were trying to get back in.
Sorry, Katie. Yeah, I was just going to make the point there that maybe one option would be if they're landlords, if they're like myself or Joan, just at some stage wants to sell where the rent is low, would there be an opportunity maybe for the local authority to buy the property rather than make people homeless and the whole trauma and expense of that?
Yes, indeed. Maybe that is the solution to keep, as you say, to keep a stock of property in the rental sector, because I think that's a huge, huge issue now, the tiny number of properties that they are to rent, unless you're looking for an Airbnb where apparently you've no trouble at all finding an Airbnb for rent. Okay, I'm going to take my last break. Stay with us.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And they are just listening to that promo for the Claire Byrne Show. More people desperate for properties. Eugene, I only have a minute left. You have sold 10 rental properties in the last year.
Yeah, I have indeed, yeah.
Why?
Well, it wasn't viable to hold on to them because if I get a unit for €1,000, the government, first of all, takes 50%, 500 in income tax. And in addition to that, I have to pay 6% universal social charge. I have to pay property tax, which brings me up to 60% of my gross income goes direct to the government. A further 20%, which is €200, goes towards the bank to repay my mortgage. So out of my €1,000, I have €200 remaining to maintain that property in a livable condition and to live on.
Eugene, we'll come back to this again because we are actually out of time, but I think that that point is well made today. 80% of what you get in your rent goes back out again in taxes and all the other things that come out of your payment. That's all we have time for today. The programme was produced by Sian O'Gorman. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon. Mark McGrath was on sound. Stand by for Ray D'Arcy up next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.